You're listening to Hard Drive DL, available at harddriveradio.com or download the Hard Drive Radio mobile app.
Hey, everybody, here, Paulie from Hard Drive Radio, and I am just delighted to have in the studio with me right now Spencer Chamberlain and Aaron Gillespie of Under Oath. Man, thank you so much for coming to see us today.
Yeah, what up?
Thanks for having us.
It was awesome to watch you guys play some acoustic tunes for us just before. I can't wait to get those out for everyone to see. I was talking to you guys earlier, and you said, you know, you've only played these songs a handful of times live so far.
So, yeah, it's a new record, you know, so.
The record's a week old tomorrow, so.
Yeah.
As the time of this taping, so, yeah.
In the space of time before, you know, between when you finish recording the record and then it's out for release, how much time are you guys spending practicing, getting ready for the road, and how much of that is just decompressing after the recording process?
We live in different places, so we kind of cram, which isn't ideal, but, like, we did 2 weeks for our upcoming tour about a week and a half ago, and then we did two kind of pop-up shows
We'll do another 2 weeks.
On release week, and then we'll do another 2 weeks.
Before the tour starts.
So about a month total, and it would be ideal to spread it out over, like, a few months, but we all live in different places. Where I'm the only one now that I live out west, and everyone else is back in Florida. So we experience a little bit of cram, you know, high school cram style, but it's good.
Good, good. The album is Erase Me. It came out April 6th. When you guys reformed back in 2015, you got back to it. How much time passed before it was time to get back in and start writing new stuff?
Well, you know, we weren't sure if there was going to be a record or more tour. I think halfway through the tour, we realized that there was going to be more tours.
Maybe even less than halfway through.
Yeah, yeah, it was all about getting everyone else on board, but Aaron and I, not looking at a deceitful way, we said that we weren't going to wait for permission from the band to start working. So after the first tour, me and Aaron started writing pretty much immediately. I think we took a week off.
Yeah, it was literally a week, and then he flew out. I have a studio out west, and he literally flew out, and we went to work. And it's funny because we didn't even, like he said, we didn't have the band on board.
Not yet.
Not yet. But we were like, let's just do it. Like,
let's just start.
We haven't played music together in 7 years. What the fuck were we thinking? Like, we should be doing this. You know what I mean? Like, we should be making music together. So we started writing, and some of those songs are actually on the record. And we were just going to start another band. Like, if the guys were like, no, we're never making a record again, we just would have done something else.
Yeah.
Like,
and some of these songs you heard, you know, you hear on the record would have been whatever that is.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, we were ready to write. I mean, within the first practice, I was living in New York, actually, when we got back together, and he was in Salt Lake City. So we flew out together for the first rehearsals for the reunion tour. So we got in the rental car on the way back to the hotel, just kind of like looking at each other like, why aren't we doing this again? Like, this is stupid. Like, this is where we're happy, and this is like our family. You know, like, we've spent more time with those guys than we have our own.
Yeah, like, no time had passed, even in rehearsals. Like the first rehearsal, we got through everything. It wasn't like struggling. It was like, oh, like,
natural.
You guys want to go on tour? Like, you know what I mean? It was like no time had passed. It was super strange. So, yeah.
That's fantastic. I will say, you know, you guys seem, you know, really, really happy and excited to be doing this. It seems like you're in a really good frame of mind these days. And I think that's probably, you know, a big improvement from where you were, say, maybe 5 years ago.
Yeah, for sure.
Or less. I mean, I think, you know, we had toxic relationships, drug issues. So once you flush it all out, you know, and really put it on paper, so to speak, like, which is what this record is, like, socially everything gets better within the band. And it, you know, if you're happy, it's so much easier to portray happiness to other people. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
Yeah, I think the breakup, as much as I was, none of us really wanted that. So half of the band didn't want to break up, the other half did, which is why we broke up. But I think even being one of the people that was like, no, let's keep going, looking back at it now, it was so necessary for all of us.
It's true.
As a band, but also as just human beings. You know, like, we needed that, you know, that storm to pass and just, like, time alone and to figure yourself out and get back right with yourself. Because I don't think if you're not right with yourself, you can't be right for your friends. So that was a brutal time in my life, but a much needed time.
I'm so glad that you guys were able to get through that and everyone's back together and making fantastic music. I mean, the album is awesome. It's out.
Thank you.
People should be hearing it. It's just some of your best work, I think.
Thank you.
And, you know, that's a tall order because you guys have a pretty hefty catalog at this point.
That's our sixth record.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Our fifth.
Fifth record.
Yeah. For a band that's been, like, how many years now? Like
2003 with this lineup.
2003. Full. I mean, sub 2003, it was kind of a local band.
Right.
So we didn't really do anything.
But that's like 15 years.
Yeah.
About 15
years.
It's
a long time.
Yeah. That's, yeah. You know, for most people who want to play music for a living, 15 years would be, like, you know, the milestone for you. But I feel like with Erase Me, like, this is hitting the reset button. Like, we're just getting started.
100%. We didn't want to go back in time and recreate something that kind of nails us to that early 2000s thing where we started. Like, yeah, that's where we started. We'll always play that stuff. But we needed to think about the next 15 years. So we wanted to make music that made us happy. You know, because a lot of times bands just keep making music that their fans like, that they're miserable doing it. So we had an opportunity to take some time away from each other, take some time away from writing with each other, and come back in with fresh mindsets and all the stuff we've learned about ourselves, about each other, about songwriting, and about music, and go forward. Like, it is a new band almost. At this point, it's like Erase Me Forward is a completely different animal. So it gives us kind of that, the chance to keep this thing going for a lot longer.
Cause, we didn't want to get pinned into a box. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's very easy for us to – we're very lucky that we had a good amount of success on our previous career. I know our earlier records, and we'll, like he said, we'll always play those. But the reality is like, I don't want to be in that nostalgia box forever. Like, that's just not a fun place to live. You know what I mean? We wanted to go forward, and it wouldn't be real. Yeah,
selling out to me is going back to your most popular record and making that for your fans, and you fucking hate it. You know, like, we're not who we were in 2006. You know, like, and I don't think anyone listening here could say that about themselves either. Like, you grow a lot, so why would you take all the tools in life and all the experiences you've learned and just revert back to 10 years ago? It just seems so just crazy to
it's
me
fake.
Like, yeah, I just think that we've grown a lot, and so is our music, and so is our albums are continuing to grow. Right, you know,
on that note, I do want to talk about, you know, recording this album. Were there any new techniques or tricks that you tried when you were recording this?
I mean, the whole thing was different in terms of, I mean, without getting specific, if we talked about specifics of that, we would be here all day. But we recorded the record as a four-piece. Which we've never...
It's always been that way, the four writers. Like, the three writers with our keyboard player. And our keyboard player actually did a lot of writing, too. Some songs started with keyboards.
And that's his first time. Song starting with him.
And but we kept it to just, it's always been the four of us, even though the six of us in the band, with the other guys there, and we just kind of cut that out of the room, like, just to keep it less, I don't know, too many opinions, too many, you know, too much.
And they were obviously involved. They would come up and listen to the tracks and, you know, all of that. But before, where we would all be in one room writing together.
We didn't want to hurt anyone's feelings, even the guys that didn't write.
You know? Like, it was always that thing. You could never say, like, that's bullshit. That's not good. Like, that's fucking terrible. Like, no. Like, when it was just the four of us, we were able to not worry about feelings. It was like, okay,
what's
man.
What's best for the song?
Like, what the song, we had the saying, song is king, no matter what. Like, no matter what that means. I don't care who plays what or who does what or how they do it. Like, as long as it comes out and is the best it could be.
And honestly, like, the first record, we worked together. Like, it used to be a fight. This guy's song versus this guy's song. And we're going to record this one. He's going to hate the other one. And this guy's going to record that one and hate this one. And, like, it was a lot of, like, arguments and a lot of, like, the record's going to be this way. We're going to set the tone for the record. And it's going to be just heavy as shit. And everything that the other guys that wanted that, if they didn't like something, they cut it. Like, we would record a chorus. I mean, I remember singing a chorus. And the producer was like, it's the catchiest thing on the record, old record. And the band were coming back, no, we're not doing that anymore, and just cut it. And that was it.
Delete.
And so every record was getting progressively, I think in my mind, shallower. It's because we're not spreading our wings a lot further. Sorry. You know, that it's like we kept closing ourselves off. Like, more things, more rules, more like, you can't do that. We stopped doing that. We're not doing that anymore. We're not doing that anymore. And every year that goes by, that starts to really make a small window of what you can make creatively. And that smothers you. So this time we just, you know, we came back in, we're like, we're not going to do that. And if they were going to do that, just not be a band. So we decided to just, let's make music that we want to hear. And if the four of us are stoked on what we hear back from the speakers, that's a song. If not, let's keep working on it. If not, it doesn't make it. You know, we wrote like 30 songs for this thing.
Wow. So that's also a first, too, in terms of working in different ways. We've always been a band that practice space jams until we have 12 songs, and sometimes that took 2 years. And here's your record. That's what you record.
No, we always showed up with 10 songs or 9 songs and had to write one there.
Yeah, we literally, this time.
That's how busy we were.
This time we literally wrote 30 songs.
And then we still wrote four there.
Yeah, we did. Four or five. Yeah, we had room to pick from.
And we had pre-production, which was the first for Under Oath. Under Oath has always been, I mean, to people, like, people love this band. You know, we have got a great fan base. But, like, to us, we were kind of always treated like children that don't deserve to be there. Like, when we get to record a record, we show up and, like, you start tracking drums on day one, and you're done at this day. And we'd be like, well, what about all those bands that we look at? Well, you guys aren't a real band. You know, that was kind of like the vibe we would always get from where we came from, was just like, we're just dumb kids, and someone's going to let us in a studio for a month. And whatever we're done with, that's what's going to happen.
And
this
is your record.
Was so much different. We got to focus. We got to work. We got to talk. And we're actually talking now because we're all friends again, you know, like, which helped, and worked together and had the time to get it to where the first Under Oath record, I can say without a doubt, every member in the band, including the guys that don't write or play on the records, every song, we all love every single song, every single moment. And that's never, ever, ever happened before. There's moments on every Under Oath record that I hate and that he hates and Tim hates and Grant hates. And it might be different moments for everyone. But on this record, it was the first record we were like, yep, from front to back, that's it.
We finally had the permission to make a record at our own pace. And we finally had permission to experiment. You know, the single, Rapture, Spencer had written a few songs for just himself, and we had 3 days left in the studio. We had been there all summer. We had 3 days left in the studio, and
a week.
I was grilling a steak outside at our apartment where we were living, and he was playing it on his phone. I literally looked at him. I was like, that's our single. And we're like, done. The record's done. Like, at this point, we're just like hanging out, kind of. And I literally called the producer that night. We both did on speakerphone. We're like,
We sent him six more songs.
We sent him six more songs, and he heard that one, and he goes, oh, my God. Like, we literally started over. Like, yeah, and that's the single. So we were allowed to do things like that.
Set up drums and did one more song with a week left.
And that's the thing that we always hear about. Like, you watch Behind the Music, and you watch Making of Albums, and you hear about these magical things happening, and we were never really allowed to do that. It was always like, you have 4 weeks. Get the fuck out. You know what I mean? Like, just what's your record sound like now? Give it to me. You know, it was never like, what do you guys want to do? Like, how do you want to be creative? Like, you know, do you want to stretch your legs? Do you want to hurry? Do you want to go slow? So we went really slow. We recorded the whole record twice.
Wow.
Literally.
Yeah. I mean, I think that was exactly what we needed as a band. You know, I think we learned more about ourselves on this record than we've learned in the whole 15 years prior to it, you know? Which is
absolutely.
I do want to talk about the single Rapture. Spencer, tell me a little bit about, you know, Aaron was saying that you were just kind of like playing around with the song on your phone. What was kind of going through your mind at the time when you were putting this thing together?
I wrote Rapture in the studio. I demoed it and then brought it. And then actually the band got their hands on it later and made it what it is, which is Under Oath. But at first I was just writing like a pop song that like didn't have a whole lot of guitars. It was like real bass driven. It was like a lot more rock and roll, lo-fi. Like, I wanted to make this lo-fi weird song, and I wanted it to sound like I was singing about sex, but I'm actually singing about drug addiction. And I like spent a lot of time with the melody on the chorus and writing those lyrics and kind of going backwards, which a lot of times in Under Oath's past, like this record's different, where a lot of stuff are lyric and melody first. When we used to be like, the band would put down a bunch of riffs and just be like, have at it, and that's all you get, you know, like, make it work. And they wouldn't change anything. The guys wouldn't add a chorus or take away time. It was like, however long that part is, you fill it up. It's like, oh, but it gets really good here, and we can keep going. Nope, we're not doing that. This time we got to do things a lot different. And Rapture was definitely one of those songs where it was all about that vocal. And I wanted to dress it as like a super dirty, lo-fi rock and roll kind of thing. And I tracked all this stuff, like a bass through a distortion pedal. And like the guitar was just kind of a lead and really thin through a Stratocaster. And it was just like real dirty lo-fi rock and roll, and then they heard it and like, but it could be under oath. And so we get Chris on it and we get Tim on it and Aaron's playing the drums. It's not me programming on a fucking laptop, you know, it's like, and that's when it comes alive, you know? So
that's awesome. Tell me about shooting the video for that song. Cause that looked like it was probably a lot of fun.
I have a confession to make. I hate music videos. Like really? Filming them. It sucks ass. I mean, it's amazing as a band to get to make one. Like that's number one. That's like a huge honor, but
doing it, it's
like,
long days.
You're faking it for 14, 15, 16, 17 hours, and it's just exhausting, and you feel like a dweeb. Like, it's hard to hone in on, like, you know, looking good or looking, quote, cool or whatever, because you feel like an asshole, like, because you're not actually doing anything. Do you know what I mean? Like,
videos are weird. They're very weird, and you're trusting someone with a vision that you can't see. You've sitting it written down, but you'll never know until it's done. And videos are tough, man. It's I don't know. I don't necessarily enjoy making them, but like he said, it's great that we still can and that people still watch them. Like
it's great that we have
in our
a
industry
place to watch them now.
Yeah, it's a it was really sad when like obviously MTV changed and then MTV2 went away and then Fuse went away and like all that stuff. I loved videos as a kid. Like I remember coming home waiting for MTV and hoping they play. That was a kind of cool thing. It's kind of like radio, like waiting to hear a song you want to hear. Some sort of excitement to that. And now everything's at the touch of your hand, but at least the video format is still something people look at, which I think is cool. Making a good video is still tough, but yeah.
I would say, you know, for videos, the performance videos are always cool, and it's good to see your band still, like, thrashing it out or you know, faking it, trying not to look like assholes. Yeah. But, you know, I always enjoy the story videos more and, like, letting somebody take the art that you've created.
That's the
and
goal.
Then basing
that's the goal.
Their
that's
art
the goal.
Off of it.
That's the goal. And we, as Under Oath has always said,
sometimes you lose, though.
Yeah.
Sometimes you win and sometimes you lose. Yeah. And if you lose bad with story,
you've already spent the money.
It's
you know,
just
so it's
going to
come out either way.
Yeah.
We've had some great videos. We've had some bad videos. We've had some okay videos. But that's the goal is you want someone to take the story on their own. And what we always try to tell them to do is the only input we normally have is like, don't take the lyrics literally. Like, I don't want to see what I'm saying. Like, let's do something different. Like, you know, take it as an artist and go somewhere with it. We've always said that. And, yeah, like you said, we win some, we lose some. So,
I want to talk a little bit about the song On My Teeth because I feel like that one was
good
a real
story.
Powder keg with a bunch of your fans. So I want to talk about the song, and then I want to talk about the reaction to it. So first, cool. Tell me a little bit about what went into making that
one.
It started with a keyboard idea. The intro was the only music written for the song.
And we went to dinner. We made this record in Beltsville, Maryland, in a garage, essentially. And there was nothing in the whole town, right? There was a liquor store that had a restaurant in it. It was called, what was the restaurant called? Old Line. Old Line Bistro. Yeah.
I never knew the name.
So
I was probably
we went to Old Line. And we
kidding.
We did some drinking and there's nothing to do. And we were listening either on the trip back or earlier that day, we were listening to the second track on the Nine Inch Nails With Teeth record, which is called What You Are. And it has like that cool ass. Yeah. The drum part is, you know, it's like that whole thing. And me tipsy was like, we got to have a thing like that on this record. So I was like, give me 190 beats per minute. And I went in and played that.
He sat on the other side through a click track, and we yelled at him on the other side until there was something that we thought was dope, like drum-wise. And over a span of 10 minutes, 15 minutes, both how that drum beat came out, and that was like kind of Chris's intro and then that drum beat. And then we based everything around that on the song. And that never happened. We had like two choruses that we had both written.
They were separate
that we spliced together and then rewrote the lyrics. You know, you can see it in our making of, like, I hum the melody through like a mic like this in the control room. So we had something to base that off of. And then we took the guitar part, like, okay, out of those two choruses, how can we make the guitar part sound cooler and darker? And it just kind of like spiraled. And then we sat in the other room of the studio and wrote the lyrics and came in and tracked it. I mean, it was a song that came together in the studio, minus the chorus, the two choruses we spliced together
in like an hour,
in
like
in
like
in the past.
Yeah, I think we listened to it on the way home that night. Like, yeah. Those are the best ones, I think. When they had just happened, they kind of fall out of the air like that. You know what I mean? Like, that particular song, like, even before we put guitars on it, the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, like, that's like, we pitched drums and made them have notes and, like, did the weirdest shit. Like, we were just inspired, you know? So it's fun when that stuff happens.
That song I really enjoyed because it just comes out like it's just a punch in the face.
Yeah.
It's so aggressive and mm-hmm. so fast. And then I start looking at all this, like, fan reaction. Everyone's got, you know, their underwear knotted up just because you dropped an F-bomb. And
yeah.
Like, really?
It's pretty ridiculous. Well, the funny thing, I don't know if anyone remembers this, maybe just because we're Florida-based, but...
Oh,
the really sad thing about this is, so all these people are freaking out about me saying fuck, which is ridiculous. In this day and age, when Trump is your president and all the stuff in the world that's going on, and this is what you want to argue about, and the same day the song came out, earlier that morning, there was a school shooting in Miami. And it's all
over
the
news.
I'm
sure you guys heard about that,
right? It was all over Twitter. It was all over, and I'm sitting here looking at these kids going like, if you're mad about that, and this is what we're going to talk about, I mean, not to be a dickhead, but, like, I don't need you as a fan anyway. Like, because there's so much worse stuff to complain about than what, I mean, it's a word. And it's, like, and it's very important. I didn't say that to piss people off or to do it on, like, oh, I'm gonna mess with our fans.
It's not like we wrote that in to get a reaction. We're not that type of, those type of people.
When you're arguing, and the song is basically you're talking to someone who stabbed you in the back, and you go, I'm not your fucking prey. Like, that's how you'd say it. You wouldn't go, I'm not your prey. I'm not your freaking prey. I'm, hey, man, that's not cool. Yeah, like, this song, it's an angry song. You can hear it. And it's not towards God or towards a Christian fan. It's so stupid that people, how people react. It's literally an argument between two people for getting screwed over. And you're just like, everything that you thought about me is a lie. Like, all this stuff that you're saying, it's like, all this stuff, that's not real. Like, we're fighting it out, you know?
And also, explanation aside, we're going to do whatever we want.
Exactly.
Like,
that's art.
We're going to do whatever we want. Like, you don't get to tell me what to say, number one. And number two, like, if your priorities are so fucking twisted that you're going to talk about a word, like, when someone killed children the same day, I just can't handle that. And to me, like he just said, like, good riddance. Like, if that makes you mad, we don't care. Like,
and that's not a disrespect to anyone. That's just, like, I mean, in this world, in this day and age, and, like, first of all, freedom of speech, and we're art, and we're expressing our art, and it's a very emotional song. It's a very emotional record. It's a very real record.
Second, Donald Trump is president. Let's talk about something for real.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't want to hear it. You know, it's like, and we try not to look at negative stuff, but people are going to hate on, they're always going to find something to hate on. If it wasn't the F-bomb, they were going to find something else. If it's not Rapture, then they'll find the next thing. If it's not this, they're going to find that. Like, the internet is kind of opened up a breeding ground of, like, all right, there's no more bullying in schools, and no one gets bullied. I got bullied as a kid. I got beat up. I got jumped. It was, like, all part of growing up to become a man.
Same.
And, like, teachers weren't helping. They'd laugh at you. Like, you were just, like, a laughingstock of people, you know, always getting picked on. And then that's been taken away. So I feel like everyone just goes home and hides behind a screen and bully. Like, it's online bullying, just sitting there like, ripping bands apart for art that they express and believe in. It's, like, it's different if you're phoning it in and someone's writing your music for you and you're just trying to make a buck. But, like, bands that actually care, like, you know, people should be supporting each other moving forward and progressing in life, not ripping each other apart. But, you know, you can't change the world. But, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of hate. People are going to find reasons to hate. When's the last time you went, and I talk about this all the time, bands that I love, bands that I hate, I would never go leave a bad comment. Bands that I love, I would never go to the Deftones Instagram and be like, hey, Chino, your voice sounds great. Love the new track. Am I thinking that in my head? I love the Deftones. They're one of my favorite bands of all time. Every record they put out, I'm like, wow, I wish I wrote that. Dang, man, I can't believe that's not me. You know, like, but I would never take the time to go over and leave that message on their Facebook or Twitter or Instagram. Like, does that mean I'm a bad person or a bad fan? No, it's just I love the music. I don't need to go tell you I love it. I'll be there at the show. I'll buy some merch. Whatever. Like, but the fact that people feel like they're so inclined to go leave negative stuff and hate and all that.
There's only one
so
flip.
Weird.
There's only one flip side of that for me, and it's the fact that if somebody cares that much about how we behaved 12 years ago, 14 years ago, that's pretty flattering to me. Like, our fans like us enough to be confused about now because of then. That's pretty cool.
I mean, I guess in a way, but it would all be it would also be nice if they, you know, would allow you to you know, be a human being and grow and change.
What, instead of think about
obviously like tolerance about tolerating someone growing up and letting them express their art, but at the same time, like, it's just interesting to me that what scares me the most, obviously, is everything I said before, but what scares me even more is the folks who are complaining that things aren't the way they were 12, 14 years ago. Are they the same as they were 12, 14 years ago? Because
I hope not.
That's actually scary.
That's even
for, like,
more terrifying.
For, like, the world.
And I think about this. If there was social media when the Beatles were a band, could you imagine the comments? Think about, I want to hold your hand to Sgt. Pepper. You know what I mean? Like, dude, that's so much of an evolution in music. And, like, that's what we were taught as kids. Like, our parents were like, the Beatles. If you think you want to hear music, you have to start with the Beatles. Then we can go to Led Zeppelin and the Doors and the Stones. And all those bands had such evolution. And we're, as kids, like, just idolizing this. And then we fall in love with bands like Nirvana and Alice in Chains and all the stuff that inspires us. And then people want to get mad about evolution of music. It was like, dude, that's... What I was taught was a song was a verse, chorus, bridge, chorus. That was like that. If you say song, that's what registers in my brain, you know, because that's what I was taught. Look at the Beatles, you know, and then evolution and music and expression and growth. Like, watch their journey. Not one song is worse than the other. They're all great, but look at the. I mean,
Octopus's Garden is bad. Yeah. Sorry.
But you know what I'm saying. I'm just general. You could put any band in that, you know, and because if you're just recreating the same music over and over again, it's like. That's not art. That doesn't inspire me as an artist or as a listener, because I'm a huge music fan too. It's like, I want someone to challenge me. I want my ears to perk up. Like, what is that? Do I like that? I don't know. Oh, I want to hear that again. You know, like that's how someone falls in love with music, over and over and over again. When a band challenges you all the time, you know, when you like, oh, they released this thing I loved. Like, I was so in love with that record like 20 years ago. And then, you know, they just kept putting out music that sounded like that. And it's like, it's fine. It's whatever. It's like, I don't want that. Who wants that? Maybe people do. I don't. Not me.
I do want to talk about, you know, the artwork and the packaging for the album itself, because it's a really cool album. Like, the way it was done, it has got the sleeve, the color, the cover, the artwork of the angel. I mean, who put all this together? How did that come about?
Some friends of ours have a creative division called Tension Division, and we've known the designer for 15 years, and we sent him all the lyrics and brought him into the studio, him and his partner, and played the entire record front to back, and that's what he came up with. That's the short version. So the long version is Spencer and I really didn't want to name the record after like one of our song titles. You know what I mean? Because you kind of, at that point, you kind of make that song the song, and I'm not just really generally a fan of that.
I don't like that. Yeah.
I want interpretation. So I was sitting by, Brandon is his name.
Nirvana, never mind. Nirvana In Utero.
Yeah.
That's all I think about.
Yeah.
They're not songs.
I was sitting by Brandon, and he was listening to the record, and on the song I Hate It, we had gotten to that song, and there's a line in that song that says, "Erase me," and he had written that on a piece of paper. And at the end of the record, he kind of held that up, and he's like, and then they just went for it, man. And I've heard that that was their third version. They never showed us version one or two, like, not of the angel. The angel is its own thing, but, like, they apparently that's the third design they did. So I would love to go back and see. But we've never had a color, really. Under Oath has always been black and white.
They made that green.
They made that Pantone colored it's called Acid Green. Pantone 381 is actually what that is. But there's many things about the record of things about destruction and deterioration and questioning and all of those things. And I think that they really kind of encapsulated that really well. And in literally out of their minds, there was no.
Well, that's what we needed. You know,
we didn't direct.
We're songwriters. We're not, you know, designers or painters or, you know what I mean? Like, maybe a little bit here and there on our lyric books. But you know what I mean? Like, I think that's like what you're talking about in the video, is like giving it to someone and hoping, like, with this guy reading all the lyrics, like, what he's going to interpret. And I love the cover and I love everything about it. But even the inside is even more my favorite, like, how it is. I was like, oh, man, like, I wouldn't have come up with that, but I love it, you know. So yeah, they did a great job.
It's yeah, they'll be recognized for that thing for a long time because it's so well done.
It's a beautiful piece of work. Even on the inside, you know, the book with all the lyrics and the pictures and his faces, just like
cool.
It's fantastic. Cool. And it is in a vinyl version as well, which I'm sure is going to look
a bunch of different
even
vinyls.
Better.
I think there's six or seven different vinyl variations. Some of them are really cool.
And a 7-inch, so there's a box set that has a bonus song.
Cigarette box style, you know, you like remove it and there's all these things in there. So you've got like two songs on each record and
it's really cool. And the Angel is in Times Square right now.
Is it?
On a digital billboard. I don't know how many more days it is, but I walked to it last night in the cold. Even though I had to sing this morning on air, I was like, I got to go see it. I'm going to walk through the cold.
We have an 8-foot bust of the Angel as well.
Where's that live?
The label had made. Well, she travels right now. So she was in L.A. last week with us for release week. And then
it's going to be at Rock in the Range.
She goes to Rock on Range.
Carolina Rebellion.
Carolina Rebellion. So she's traveling a bit. So
Is it going to be on stage with you?
No. I mean, it would get
destroyed. But it is, you know, for being as big of Nirvana fans as we are, not knowing it, when I saw it, like, put together, it just reminded me of the In Utero when they had those on the stage. I was like, that is so cool. I was like, oh, man, this is like the goals checked off on that list. I was like, I have an In Utero.
Yeah, when we saw it for the first time about two Mondays ago. We were doing like a pop-up secret show, and they had like a giant wall built with all the art from inside the record, you know, like a 10-foot-long wall. And they had a neon sign that said Erase Me, and then they had this statue there, and it was cool. It was a really cool thing. So they're going to carry that around some for fan, you know, photos and label stuff, and yeah.
That's awesome. You did mention I Hate It before, and we were very privileged to have you play that acoustically for us. Can you tell me a little bit about what went into that song?
This is a good one. This song was one of the – remember we were telling you earlier about we started writing before the guys were even on board. And this was the fifth song me and Aaron had written alone. We ended up writing 20 alone.
And we didn't – and again, at this point, we didn't know it would be an Under Oath song.
Yeah. And one day, I'd like people to hear the demo because it's the same vocal, same structure.
Same lyrics.
Same melody. It's just like 10 BPM slower.
Maybe even slower.
It's and like this like hollow body guitar that I was playing. I remember I was having this conversation like, dude, think Black Hole Sun. Like, we need our Black Hole Sun. We need like this. And this was before Chris died too, which is really sad that we were even talking about this. And yeah, that's a whole other story. When Chester died, while we were in the studio. I mean, all bad stuff. And all helping me, and meanwhile, getting clean too. Like, those were big moments. But anyway, like this, it was just like grungy. Like, this slow. He had played a Fender Rhodes. I played the guitar and the bass, and he played drums, and we both did vocals, just like it is on the record. But I just feel like we talk about drinking too much, but it was another night where we had already tracked a song, and it was like, we're going to go home and sleep. And we were just kind of on one. We were talking about some really deep shit, which is what's in the song. You know, we were talking about divorce and getting off drugs or trying to get off drugs and trying to go through divorce and all this stuff. And we just got in the car. I shouldn't say that. We got in an Uber, and we went to an Irish pub and ordered chicken fingers while we were talking about the things like, you know, this line, I hate it. You know, I hate it.
And that was a phrase we kept coming to, like.
And then I said, you're the only thing that gets me high, and I hate it. And after he had said, I hate it. And we went back to the studio, and there was booze at the studio as well. We were pretty boozed up at this point, and we actually wrote the whole song and tracked it until like 4 a.m, and the vocal takes and everything, and it's phenomenal. The demo sounds great. It's like, so we took it to the band. They didn't like it. But once we let them like play on it, and they got in there, and we sped it up, and put some more modern keyboards, because this was another one that was like super kind of like throwback sounding, because we were using all analog gear.
It was 90s as hell.
Yeah. It was our
badass.
It was our true colors coming out. We were like, I mean, Soundgarden and Chains and Nirvana. We were just, I mean, the guitar was just, you know, dirty and feedbacky, and it was great. And then when we got it in with Chris and Tim and we sped it up, and we added elements to it, but we didn't take any of the original stuff away. The original guitar lead is still there. Mm-hmm. The original chord progression, original
There's actually yeah. shit in there that's sped up from the original sessions. There's stuff in there from the original sessions.
So that song is almost, you know, the whole thing that you guys recorded in that demo and then just a few extra layers on top.
Well, I mean, written-wise, we retracked everything. We recorded everything. Tim did Tim on it. Chris did Chris on it, which makes that Under Oath and not just Spencer and Aaron writing songs, maybe a little bit drunk, you know, like that, you know. But, yeah, that's one of my favorites. It's
Liquid courage on that one to be able to say those things, though. I think that's part of the biggest part of that track is the fact that we were able to say all that stuff and it may have been in a moment of weakness, but it needed to be done for us to kind of be able to
move forward, put
those thoughts out there that are so personal.
The whole record.
Because, I mean, the record we literally wrote about our lives, and we were both going through the shittiest times in our lives, and we wrote this record, and it's not as poetic, and it's not as whatever, but it's real, and it's like our conversation.
We really focused in on that, which we've never had time to do either. Like, that was all on purpose. Like, we really wanted to. I was telling the last interviewer that we had a conversation. Me and Aaron had talked about, like, especially when we started writing, we didn't know it would even be Under Oath. We didn't know if they'd be on board. We had the conversation. We said, let's put it all out there as if this is the last Under Oath record ever, because we might not get another chance. We don't know. And, like, when we broke up last time, I felt so incomplete. Like, I was like, fuck. You know, like, so we really made sure it's like, let's really focus on what we want to say here. Like, let's really, which hints the F-bombs and the very, like, I mean, this is about addiction and this is about this. You know, you can really feel it. And people are hitting me up online all the time. Like, I can't believe I'm honest. I can't believe blah, blah, blah. That's really what we said. I mean, we looked at each other in the face. We're like, this might be the only chance we get. So what do we want to leave out there for people if we never get to make another record again? Like, you never know what's going to happen. So this is what we did, you know.
Well, I definitely think the work speaks for itself. But, you know, if I could just throw in my two cents, I would say pulling out all the stops on an album like this has definitely paid off for you guys artistically.
Thank you.
I think it's fantastic, and I hope there's another one after it.
There will be.
And
that was the same thing. We're going to be going for a really long time, but at the time of writing this, with a lot of the lyrics,
we didn't
change a lot of lyrics, like, in the studio when everything's going well and, like, I'm sober or off drugs or whatever, and, you know, his happier place, and, like, things are going well with the band. Like, a lot of the lyrics were written when we weren't sure, so we were, like, really throwing in all the chips of where, like, we're like, dude, I don't know, you know, like,
yeah.
And we had some conversations of, like, you know, what if someone hears this? It's like, it's really like being naked in front of a ton of people, and it's like, well, let's just go out there swinging, and then, you know, like, let's just do it.
Sure.
And that's the beauty of it, I think. Absolutely. Yeah. Before we wrap up here, is there anything you'd like to say to your fans that'll be listening to this interview?
Thank you for listening.
Yeah, thanks for the record. If you don't have it, go grab it.
Yeah, if you don't have Erase Me, go check it out. It's our most honest work. First time we ever worked as a band and actually worked together, not against each other. So if you like the way that sounds, then yeah, check it out.
The album is Erase Me. The band is Under Oath. Aaron and Spencer, guys, thank you so much for coming in. This was a blast.
Thanks, man.
Appreciate it, sir.
More episodes of Hard Drive DL at harddriveradio.com. Download the Hard Drive Radio mobile app and keep listening.